Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of the hero has dawned and the Elysium Project unfolds. The way of the hero posits that one must utilize one's individual strengths to make one's world a better place. One need not be perfect or operating from ideal circumstances either. Are not the heroes that inspire us often tragically flawed? Are their lives not in a state of flux and full of uncertainty? Does this prevent them from attempting and accomplishing great things? Of course not. Our Age of Heroes initiatives have harnessed the creative energy and focused the attention of many heroic individuals with radically diverse backgrounds over the years, directing it towards improving the collective quality of human life. The Age of Heroes welcomes secular, interfaith, and interfaith participation. And as with the Argonaut expedition of old, the children of different and sometimes warring gods are invited to partner with exceptional mortals to face challenges and accomplish things that really need to get done. Hark, for tonight I would tell you of Michael Del Russi, champion of Olympus. Greetings and welcome. How are you, Michael?
Good evening. It's great to be with you, and it's great to be with all of our fellow Olympians.
Yes, it most certainly is. And I want to thank you for everything you've done for this particular adventure and for my community. You've generously shared of your time. You've generously shared of your resources. You've generously shared of your expertise and your experience. Have given this freely and openly, and I know I've certainly benefited from all that I've learned.
Thank you. I think, but I would say to you that we've all benefited by the channels that you have opened up for us to share whatever research and wisdom we ourselves have been pursuing, and I want to thank you. Just there are no words to express how grateful we are that you've opened up these channels to all of us, those of us that the joy comes from sharing with our fellow Olympians the wisdom that we have incurred. So we thank you for that. And words are certainly not enough
in that
area.
Michael, your words mean a lot to me, and I'm greatly honored by them. Today we're doing kind of like a reboot, and we're going to introduce our listeners to all the folks that are involved in the Age of Heroes. When did you first become health conscious?
I would say it was way back and as early as 16 years old. Believe it or not, my father had always had a bottle of vitamin C in the cabinet, in our medicine cabinet. And he was always talking about, you know, progressive nutrition back in those days. Not too much was known. But he would, and we're going back to the early 60s, and I would often hear him talk about vitamins. He didn't have the wealth of knowledge that we have today, but he had a curiosity there. And that curiosity ultimately stemmed from a gentleman by the name of Carlton Fredericks, who used to be on at a television program. I think it was on every Saturday morning. And Carlton Fredericks would talk extensively about nutritional supplements, eating nutrient-dense foods. And he was very much against high sugar. He felt that high sugar and processed foods was the main danger of our times. And he would talk immensely about these different concepts that he had. And my father would listen to him early in the morning. And I picked up that habit back, I would say, in the late 70s. And I would watch him every Saturday morning. I would watch him while I was having my own homemade French toast with plenty of maple syrup. But nonetheless, it spawned my own curiosity. And as time went on, I just developed a deeper research and into all of the possibilities that nutritional supplementation, which basically to me meant, you know, going beyond what was recommended by the FDA, because Carlton Fredericks would often demonstrate how the amounts of vitamin C and the amounts of vitamin E and the amounts of selenium and zinc that the government was recommending fell far short for what was needed for optimum health. They were recommending amounts of these nutrients that would barely keep you alive, would barely able one to survive, if you will, from a physiological standpoint. So then, of course, he went on to present studies that showed the positive effects of taking larger amounts of these nutrients than the government had recommended while keeping them in the safety zone. And how you do that, of course, is, you know, review the proper studies. Most, you know, studies, double-blind studies, which showed that certain cancers have been slowed in terms of growth with the use of selenium and vitamin E, and heart disease was more likely to slow its progress with certain amounts of vitamin E and fibers and CoQ10. And at that time, information on CoQ10 was almost non-existent. Nobody knew about CoQ10. Today, and the research I've done and talking with my fellow associates, more and more cardiologists automatically recommend CoQ10 when they put their patients on statin drugs. And they realize now, at least to a large extent, that the heart muscle thrives on CoQ10 for any number of reasons. And that opens up another area of science. So that's how I basically was introduced to the area of integrative medicine or non-toxic therapies, if you will. So Carlton Fredericks was my inspiration for a lot of years. And
I remember
from my early teens. Do you? Yes. He was a real pioneer.
And Gates McFadden, I remember.
Yes, I remember him as well. And Adele Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a real breakthrough, I think it was in the late 1970s, I'm not sure, when the book Life Extension came out. No relationship
yes.
to the Life Extension Institute, but do you remember that book?
Yes, I remember it. It's been decades since I read it, but I remember when it came out, it caused quite a stir.
Yes, Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. I believe they were two biochemists. And that book really took the nation by storm, because within it they presented, and it was very scientifically based, and they presented study after study what higher doses of certain nutrients, or as Linus Pauling coined the term, orthomolecular medicine, was capable of doing. And that book really opened some eyes. And then as we move further down the line, we had Adele Davis, who had a large following in terms of natural healing, and on and on we went. These were basic pioneers in the 70s, the late 60s, early 70s, that opened the public's eye to the possibility that higher doses of certain nutrients can provide optimum health. You know, it wasn't just a matter of keeping you alive. And unfortunately, the amounts of nutrients that were recommended by the FDA during the 50s and early middle 60s, that was the goal. You needed just 65 milligrams of vitamin C a day to keep you alive, to keep you functioning. So, but these research scientists who went a little bit further and said, what if a little more vitamin C, a little more selenium, zinc, vitamin E, what healing effect could they have? And the rest is history. We know now that most research scientists, most nutritional scientists and allopathic physicians know that higher doses of these nutrients can actually prevent certain types of heart disease and slow the growth of certain cancers. So for me, that's where my interest really began to burn, if you will, and heighten with these great, great pioneers of the past.
Those conversations are still going on today, the same conversations with the same information being given. And a lot of it, again, I haven't researched this as deeply or as extensively as you have, but even I recognize that some of the things being touted as facts have actually been disproven long ago.
Well, absolutely. We know that a simple multivitamin, as an example, as we get older, none of our digestive systems work the same. You know, none of our digestive, from the time the enzymes begin to dissolve and do what they have to do with the foods we consume, starting with the enzymes in the mouth, by the time a multivitamin reaches your intestines, you're probably getting, even if it's a high-quality supplement, you're probably getting less than half of whatever that multivitamin may contain. And I've heard, it always kind of gets my blood pressure rising when I hear or read a physician say that, well, all you really need at the most is a multivitamin. There's no proof that higher doses of any of these nutrients, antioxidants, herbs, phytonutrients can do anything. And it just sends you over the top, if you will, because you know all of the studies that are out there. Our former president, who, when he contracted, which was a very, very serious case of COVID, he was lucky to survive it, actually, along with remdesivir, the drug that they treated him with. He was treated with a wide array of natural supplements, including melatonin, vitamin D3, zinc, vitamin C, selenium, were also part of the regimen that he was given along with the remdesivir. Now, these were conventional physicians. Obviously, they must have known something. Less obvious is the fact that they refuse, even today, as we speak, to share some of this information with the American public. And by at the very least, recommend to the public that, yes, by all means, get vaccinated. By all means, get your boosters. But you might also want to consider a stronger nutritional program. There may be certain supplements that offer protection. Do your research, look into vitamin C, look into the amounts of vitamin zinc, you may be ingesting. At least, at the very most conservative, present this these potentials to the American public. Present this area for protection to the American public. As we speak today, you are very well aware, as I am, that over a year ago, I was speaking the same words that I'm speaking now.
Yes.
I just read a case today where an individual was vaccinated and boosted and came down with COVID. They're not telling us yet. I repeat, they're not telling us yet. I will say till the day my feet stop touching the earth, that these vaccines are not as effective as they're claiming. It is not the unvaccinated that are causing the entire nation and the entire world to be in the red. It is not. Your logical mind would tell you that. These vaccines are not as effective as claimed, on top of the fact that they're threatening the world's economy with all of the time and investment. Now we have a record. We have a record number of people testing positive for COVID, testing positive for the Omicron virus, if you will. But we don't know even if how many of these tests are reliable. We really don't know, and either do the manufacturers. We don't know how reliable they are. So the whole world right now is being sent into a state of panic in virtually every area of our lives. And all I'm saying is that what I said over a year ago now, that do what your divine intuition tells you, and I believe we all are possessed of divine intuition, a deeper sense of knowledge that we can tap into. But while you're getting your vaccines, stimulate your immune response with some basic nutrients. So, you know, at this point in time, I think the world is right in the process now of learning a valuable lesson. Sooner or later, we're going to have to step back and take a good look at just what we're doing. I know Dr. Ronald Hoffman in New York recently made a statement, and he and I had a conversation. He said, we're putting too much focus on the vaccines, too much hope into the vaccines, and not enough in therapeutics. In other words, can we develop more effective therapeutics once a person has been infected to get people healed quicker, to save lives, and to get them out of the hospital, if you will, get them removed from hospitalization. And one of the ways we do that, along with conventional medicine, is to stimulate the immune response. And once a person does develop COVID, what happens then? All right, they're supplying their diet with the right nutrients, the right antioxidants that we know bolster T cell and immune response. Well, what about the inflammation? What about the inflammation that comes with COVID? Then we can calm inflammation, according to some very valid studies, with aspirin and fish oil, has been shown, and L-cysteine, which have been shown to calm inflammation in the lungs and slow it significantly. So, you know what? In a few minutes, we've covered some really, which potentially could be life-saving information, life-saving information. But unfortunately, the American public is still not being told. In fact, they curiously continue to avoid the subject of progressive nutrition in both preventing and combating this virus. So where are we? Well, just
we share our journeys, our unique journeys and our perspectives. Right now, as you said, there isn't a lot of clarity, and we're in the midst of a global pandemic. And although more and more nutrition is finding its way into the arsenal of the medical community, like, for instance, since the pandemic, I don't walk around as much as I used to. So my doctor prescribed three. So that's something that before then it would have been my vitamin store or Prevention Magazine that recommended that. And now the doctors are recommending it. And I know at other times doctors have recommended vitamins, prescriptive vitamins. So there is more openness to it, and it is slowly becoming acceptable medical practice. But that's going to be a very slow change. And the fact that it's moving at all is very encouraging and discouraging at the same time because of the rate in which it's progressing. But that's the purpose of these shows. I mean, neither of us are doctors, but we each approach wellness in the same way. We want to be well. We want our loved ones to be well. We want our communities to be well. We want our planet to be well. Exchanging these thoughts and exchanging information is valuable. And as we've said many times, we're hoping that it inspires people to start their own research, to look into it for themselves, you know, to ask questions, to seek answers where an answer is not clear. And the answers are not always clear. And I'll jump to away from the pandemic for a second and go to bodybuilding. An activity that I've indulged in since Jack LaLanne and Charles Atlas back in my childhood in the Peplum movies, fueling that. We still don't have agreement amongst people who indulge in bodybuilding, much less the medical community, on how many macronutrients you should have and in what balance. There's all sorts of competing opinions. There are people who have similar degrees and similar background in publishing medically and in their work histories, making wildly different interpretations and recommending wildly different solutions. So even something as basic as that, we don't have an answer. Like even right now, and this has been going for a long time, it's not a new thing with the macronutrients? Like, is eating lots of carbs and low fat and moderate protein healthy? Is eating lots of protein with moderate fats and low carbs healthy? We don't know. The only way we could find out is, again, by trying it. And I've shared very openly that some of the diets I've tried with the best of intentions, written by people with the best of intentions, have not been healthy for me. Like, for instance, the pre-steroid bodybuilding diet of drinking a gallon plus of whole milk a day and eating like tons of citrus fruit. I think that that contributed more than anything else to giving me type 2 diabetes over the years that I did it. Until that happened, I looked great and I had huge muscles and I felt great until the day I started falling downstairs. So we all have to experiment, and that taught me to fine-tune the question. But it's very disheartening that as a civilization, as an advanced civilization, we can't even get, you know, consistent answers about some of these basic things. So it is very frustrating.
Well, it is. And as an example, to exemplify what you just said, you have many physicians today and many researchers talking about how sugar can fuel the growth of cancer, simple sugars. And I believe that can be true. But curiously, what's being left out is we also know that saturated fat, study after study over the years, can also fuel a precancerous environment, if you will. So we live in a society, unfortunately, where the squeaky wheel gets the most attention. For the past 20 years, and I'm probably off on that mark, I'm sure it's longer, since the day the boon of the Atkins diet, you know, carbohydrates have been the bane of civilization, if you listen to many of the so-called nutritional researchers. High-fat diet has been the order of the day. You may also remember that, I think it was almost a year ago, we discussed that, and this is still taking place, by the way, the rate of colon cancer amongst the young is rising significantly, and researchers are scratching their heads wondering why. I speculated at the time that could it be that the promotion, both in terms of the mainstream media and probably in our private lives, you know, our the parents of the day, say that, well, high fat, there's nothing wrong with fat. The latest health news is fat is good. There's nothing wrong with fat. And I'm just speculating that perhaps this consumption of high fat in the last 5, 6, 10 years may be a contributor to this curious rise and colon cancer amongst the young. I mean, this has been virtually unheard of over the last 20 years. It's very unusual for a person in their early 30s or late 20s to develop colon cancer.
Right.
It's very unusual. And I meditated on the possibility that this high-fat diet, it's okay now. It's eating a burger with bacon and cheese is good for you. Go out, son, get yourself one and bring me back one. And that's where we are. Why? Because the so-called nutritional experts today are claiming that the health advice that's been offered to us by the American Heart Association and the National Cancer Institute is outdated. Well, these major institutions in this case have been right. They've been right. They continue even today to recommend the DASH diet. We know the DASH diet is a diet that's recommended to bring down blood pressure, basically. And the DASH diet has a lot in common with the Mediterranean diet. So this high-fat fad that we've continued to promote, I think it's beginning to take its toll. And if you look at it from just a standpoint of logic, you can blame sugar for only so much, but the high-fat diet that we're addicted to and that we're being told is great for losing weight, for achieving fitness goals, just may have something to do with this. I always ask this question: if does eating a diet that's dominant and saturated fat, mostly meats, some dairy and cheese. What other possible life extension properties does a diet like this have? There's virtually no phytonutrients. There's virtually no enzymes. It's missing a lot of the important micronutrients that we need to survive on. So show me the scientific evidence where this diet is superior to a more plant-based diet, a diet that's more plant-based and also very much available to us. Show me the life extension evidence. I have not seen it. You may lose weight, I will admit. Many people do lose weight on that diet, but most of the time, that weight loss is temporary, number one. Number two, you're talking about some very high inflammatory foods there. You're talking about an ingestion of more nitrates and nitrites in the bacon and the meats. And, you know, show me where a diet like this contributes to low inflammation, chronic inflammation in the body, and an overall pathway to possible life extension, adding a few years to your life. I haven't seen it. And I've read most of all of the experts, from the Zone diet to the Atkins diet, which is constantly being modified, and the keto diet. I'm not even going there. If I hear the word keto one more time, I don't know. I might jump off a curb. But, you know,
we wouldn't want that. It's frustrating, though, like, because I'm diabetic type 2, and I test everything. I've tested all these diets you mentioned and more. And what I found after, since I had the diabetes 10 years ago through experimentation, that what works best for me is a diet like high in the protein, moderate in fat, mm-hmm. and low in carbs. But that doesn't mean eliminating all carbs. It's just certain mm-hmm. types of carbs. It's processed carbs and also mm-hmm. carbs that grow underneath the earth, like potatoes and things like that. But I could eat tons mm-hmm. of other vegetables, and I do. Mm-hmm. And I found that of all the combinations, that manages to keep my blood within more normal ranges. And it happened to me again recently. I lowered my blood to the double digits, which is really good. And I was doing fine. It was reducing. And I called to find out when we could lower my metformin. Because, you know, you don't want your blood too low and then to be taking metformin, you know, because low blood sugar can be just as dangerous as high blood sugar, if not more so, on an immediate basis. Right. And my doctor scolded me for cutting out grains, and she told me how important grains were. So I went back to eating grains, moderate amounts, mm-hmm. and good grains, not crap grains, but, you know, health food mm-hmm. store, organic grains in moderation. And my blood sugar became mm-hmm. out of control again. And it's taken me weeks to start getting a handle on it. So for me, my body tends to favor that a bit more. And what I'm trying to do now is combine the best of, like, the Mediterranean diet, the mm-hmm. Atkins type diets, the keto type diet, you know, the different types of diets, where they all agree on certain points, regardless of what they disagree on. They all agree on the fact that processed food is not good for you. They all agree on the right. fact that you can eat an unlimited amount of certain vegetables, which contain the nutrients. So I'm looking at the commonalities and try to stick to those, and then just play with the macronutrient levels and other types of things. Since the pandemic, meat has not tasted the same to me. I don't know if it's because they relaxed the requirements for their inspections or what happened, but I love meat, and meat has not tasted very good. I've cut down on my meat substantially. Not because I like meat less or I crave meat less, because meat just doesn't taste good anymore.
Mm. Well, yeah, and another problem with a high meat diet, a diet high in saturated fat, and beef is largely responsible for this, is it raises the uric acid in
right.
some people. And uric acid, as you know, creates an unwanted environment of systemic inflammation. And, you know, the one major discovery I think we've made about in terms of human health over the last, I think it's almost 20 years now, is the effect that the systemic inflammation has on our overall well-being. We know now that inflammation is probably responsible for most of the degenerative diseases that we continue to be plagued with. And I certainly agree with you. You know, it's, again, it comes back to the divine intuition that we're all equipped with and what that still small voice tells us. But the fact of the matter is, I think when it comes to weight loss, yes, a diet lower in, I fully believe, processed carbohydrates certainly has its place. But I think that a high-fat diet on long-term has too many deleterious effects on the human body. And you down the line, these effects come home to roost. The evidence over 50 years, I believe, still doesn't lie. The American Heart Association still steadfastly recommends a diet that's high in complex carbohydrates, and lean protein, and plenty of fruits and vegetables. I think it's a diet that still makes the most sense. So that's the diet I personally recommend. The DASH diet is excellent. The Mediterranean diet, which is a little higher in the good fats, the monounsaturated fats,
right,
certainly. And, you know, study after study has shown that the Greeks, the Italians, the Spanish on some level, all adhere. That when they adhere to the traditional Mediterranean diet, most individuals do better. As far as grains, you know, it's interesting. Now, grains have taken a rap lately also from the keto crowd and the high-fat crowd. But what was interesting, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, the dog foods, and you may have heard of this, dog foods that were removing grains, they were for just whole foods mostly, meats, and put fruits and vegetables, but removing grains. Something interesting was being discovered, and my vet personally warned me against this. Dogs were dying of cardiovascular disease.
Yes.
At an alarming rate. They came to discover that it appeared that this was because grains were being removed from most dog foods. And so I stepped back and in my own mind, I said, well, why would this be? But then it occurred to me, well, you're removing a lot of the B complex vitamins like folic acid and other nutrients that are essential for overall heart health. And this could be main folic acid, B12, the B complex, getting less in the way of B complex, which we know helps convert food into energy. So now I'm thinking, well, could this be the cause? Well, I don't know that the actual cause has ever been determined. My vet told me, whatever you do, don't buy dog foods that are completely void of grains. We know
right
now there's a danger. So you know what? We don't know. We just don't know.
That's a good point. Our dog, one of our dogs, our Chihuahua, our first dog that we had for years, she started getting sick with that. And we don't know. It could have been a number of factors. She was the runt of the litter, and she'd been overbred. So usually it developed problems on the age that she developed problems. But she started getting, she started deteriorating pretty quickly. And we wondered if that was it, because we read that as well. And so we switched back to the regular dog food, but we tried to give her a healthier diet through this expensive dog food, and it turns out that it might have been harming her, you know. So yeah,
yes,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, I believe that the cause of the onset of heart disease is because you're missing a lot of the B complex, which comes mainly from grains. You know, B complex is mostly. Grains are mostly are the primary source of B complex vitamins. So, and now they've reversed their position on that, thankfully. So, you know, again, it pays to go deeper in our research. And I call that, I feel that's part of our bicameral, or I also like to term it, our Olympian mind. And an Olympian mind to me is an Olympian mind perfection in the human form, perfection in terms of the physical ideal. And I think that's for us, for me, I've been humbly inspired to seek that quest more aggressively for 2022. And that's our calling here. It's been our calling since a very young age, and I'll continue to seek out the most valid, dependable studies possible to share them with our audience so they can be at least be aware of what some of these nutrients, you know, many of which nutrients we discuss, perhaps they have not heard of, like IP6. And our next get-together, I'd like to share the latest information on a nutrient that I think is invaluable, especially for fighting metastatic diseases. So there's been some new research, as long ago as, I believe it was a year ago, I touted the amazing possibilities of IP6. And on our next program, I'd like to delve a little bit deeper in that, because very interesting research continues to come out about IP6. In fact, if someone was to ask me on my last day on Earth, what do you think would be the most protective supplement I can use to prevent cancer and stimulate immune activity and T-cell response and macrophage response, I would recommend IP6. And I hope there's a day where our conventional research scientists really initiate quality, long-term studies on IP6. We know there's already been some great studies on it. Dr. Shamuddin from India, he wrote the book on IP6 and presented it. I guess it's 25 years ago now, and still, and I would recommend it to anyone, by all means, go on the internet and go to WebMD, which they cover. And they're a very conservative website, as you probably know. And they do cover IP6. See what WebMD has to say about IP6. You know, here's an objective, non-partial, conservative website that they go strictly by the book, if you will, in terms of medical therapies. See what they have to say. And then meditate on the information you've ingested, and see for yourself if IP6 might not save lives. So what we share today, our research, and that's what we are, all of us. We're researchers.
Yeah, we are.
We do the research that others may neglect to do. So I say, do the research, and then follow what your Olympian mind tells you. Olympian mind to me is when you're really thinking out of both hemispheres of the mind that the divinity has granted us with, then come to your own conclusions. But somewhere out there, and this is something that will be with me till the end of my life, somewhere out there is a life that can be saved, a life that can be extended by some of the nutrients we discuss here, from going from 5 milligrams of zinc a day to 25 milligrams of zinc a day, which are well within the safety limits. Might just be enough to stimulate an elder's immune system and save their lives. And that's what this is all about. That's what you do is all about. That's what I do is all about. That's what all of your honored guests, that's what they're all about.
That's very true, and I've been blessed with a handful of people who are as dedicated to this type of ministry as we are. And again, like us, they stand in different places and focus on different things, but they're all sincere in their desire to find the truth and to share the truth and to, again, have people look and research and think about things and ask questions and try to create it's the quest for optimal wellness, the quest for the golden fleece, or as you just called it, the quest for the Olympian mind. It never ends, and it's ongoing. And again, what's disheartening is that a lot of the older conversations that should have stopped are continuing. and it detracts from some of the newer conversations that should be taking place, but get lost in all the noise.
Absolutely. Well, it's just like, you know, for many years, I guess, since the early 90s, I haven't been doing it in a while, but my late friend Karen Fitzpatrick and I, we would discuss, you know, psychic mediums and life after death and the eternal substance of consciousness. And we've always believed, the two of us, that spirit survival is very real. And
yes,
we know now, we know it's very real. And, you know, and thankfully, even though technology can sometimes be a double-edged sword, we know now that there's no question about life after death. When I hear certain conservative groups and the spiritual field talk about, well, spirits really, there's no spirit survival. Spirit survival will only exist, as an example, when the end time comes, when judgment day comes. And, you know, conservative Christianity, many evangelical groups all still believe this way. But here's the reality. It's, to me, it's no more of a debate, because we're capturing spirit survival, both on video and audio.
Yes.
They speak at times. Names are mentioned. You know, I always believe this. I said this 20 years ago, and I pray really to the gods themselves that this day will come to pass. I believe we will become so advanced in tapping into the higher levels of vibration that are all around us, technologically speaking, that you'll be able to turn on your computer or your TV, and we will be able to contact those who have passed on through that modality. It hasn't happened yet. We are capturing spirit survival on video. We're capturing spirit survival on audio, EVP, I believe is what they call it. I believe there'll be a day that we'll be able to talk to our loved ones even more profoundly. Hasn't happened yet, but I think we are headed in that direction. Do you see if anything like this plastered on the front pages of our major? Well, no. But we know this research is taking place. So when various spiritual denominations talk about life after death and they debate it, well, I don't think there's any question that it obviously exists, because it's being captured through our latest technology. So, you know, it's no longer a debate. The area between the spiritual and the scientific field, the gap is closing significantly, I believe, when it comes to spirit survival. For years, we separated the two. It's no more paranormal, if you will. It's really entering into the world of normal existence. It can be categorized as part of our normal existence. Mediumship, I think, if you go to an authentic, you find an authentic medium. In fact, there's one up by where you live, in Pompton Plains. There's Journey Within Spiritualist Church. Karen and I visited that frequently during the 90s. She's an amazing woman. She's a former Catholic nun. And you just know, when you're receiving an authentic medium reading, and you know that obviously by the details they give you, very specific, that they could find nowhere else. There's nowhere they can garner this kind of information. So we know that mediumship should be a definite part of our lives in terms of seeking, of course, a true medium, a quality medium, which can be hard in some cases, because I believe it's real. And I believe there are many that are blessed with the gift. I believe we can all have it, but not too many have it in an enhanced form the way some do.
And that's a line of inquiry that, again, on Mount Olympus, we're pursuing that. In fact, tomorrow our guest has a podcast. It's called A Small Medium at Large, which is very clever, very clever. And she seems like a very pleasant person. I've interacted with her, and tomorrow we'll have her on the podcast. But her name's Gail. And it's a valid line of inquiry. I personally have had a lot of experience with that. And as to what you said about it crossing over into science, I remember the days, even when we weren't as technically advanced as we are now, but you could prove it to yourself with a tape recorder, a regular tape recorder, by listening to the white noise and cultivating the white noise, that if you ask questions in the air of a haunted place, you'll get answers and they'll be on tape. And that you prove it to yourself really, really fast just by doing that.
Well, yes, and I haven't tried that, but that's an excellent suggestion. You know, we live in a chaotic age. We're living in an age now where our government has finally admitted, as an example, that UFOs do exist. It took all of these decades of some of our brave researchers of the past to put their private lives, their personal reputations on the line to stand and say, we don't know what some of these objects are. We believe they're not of this world. Now our government has made an official announcement after what it was a 40-day study, I believe, that UFOs do exist, but we don't know what they are, quote, unquote. We don't know what they are. And look how many decades it took for the official announcement. It's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? As those of us who have explored the paranormal field and the field of alien visitation, ancient astronauts, and with more than enough evidence to indicate that's a very valid theory, look how long it took them to finally say, well, you know what? There may be some evidence here scientifically, that we cannot define. And what is science anyway? To me, science is just the measuring stick that we're using as of now, as of the present, to define certain areas of our life that were previously a mystery. And now we understand certain things. We weren't sure what quantum physics were. Now we know what quantum physics are principally. There's still a lot we don't know about quantum physics. But we know that quantum physics exists, and the eye of the observer has something to do with the way that the atomic structure reacts. We didn't know anything about this 60 years ago. So you know what? It's all about the measuring stick of science, and that measuring stick that we call science, it needs to ever expand and be open to expansion and into the mystical, because I think the mystical is just undiscovered science. What we call the mystical is just undiscovered science as we know it. So I think that's where we're headed. A bit slowly, but that's where we're headed.
I think so too, and it's a journey, it's an adventure, and we have our lifetimes to partake in it, and I'm glad that you're part of not just the Optimal Wellness Quest, but our quest to look at these bigger areas, like are there celestials? Do they communicate with people? Are these the same celestials that communicated with people in antiquity? What are they really like? What is their nature? What's their purpose? What is their relationship to us? And as you brought up tonight, do we survive after death? Does consciousness survive? If so, in what way does it survive? Can it communicate with us? These are timeless human questions, and it's very important for people to try to answer them. And as with the dietary quest and the fitness quest, everybody needs to answer those questions for themselves and not just believe the first thing that you're told. And it's the journey itself that transforms you. And even if the journey's end, you're no wiser in terms of the real answers as you were when you started. The journey and the asking of the questions transforms you into somebody more and somewhat humbler at the same time, because you realize the greatness of the mystery that is our existence. And often if you don't look into these things, you fail to appreciate that greater mystery.
Absolutely. And as you were talking earlier about the getting back for a moment to the bodybuilding diets that were so recommended during years that we were coming up, the two major proponents for the muscle-building, bulk-building diet, if you will, were Vince Gironda and a gentleman by the name of Rio Blair. Rio Blair had his own supplements out, and he was a large endorser, if you will, powerful endorser, to the high-fat, heavy-cream diet. And that diet does put bulk on you. There's no question that the diet will put size, will pull bulk. But that's why the bodybuilders of the golden age, as much as we admire many of them, they used to go on to, they used to bulk up sometimes to the extent they had, that then they were more or less panicked to go the opposite direction. They had to slim down drastically to be, in order to be ready for competition. And we know now in the body sculpting arena that it's better to stay within 5, 6, 7 pounds of your ideal weight year round. Remember that?
Yes, I remember it.
And Vince Guaranda, as an example, used to recommend huge amounts of beef and liver tablets, a gallon of milk
that.
A day, you know, when you're really trying to bulk up. And this is so deleterious to human health. And now we know better, of course. And while the bodybuilders of today are engaged in other health practices, which are not life-extending habits, if you will, at least they know that keeping in shape year-round is the better way to go. But so while the Golden Age presented so many wonderful aspects in terms of developing the classic human figure, there were some habits that they adhered to that were not very healthy.
That is very, very true. And again, I found that out the hard way, but I found that out. And it taught me a great many things even those who you admire and who've demonstrated the results that you want can also, you know, give you bum advice. And again, not maliciously. This was the best they had at the time, and they shared it. But each of us is an individual. Each of us is different. So it might not work out the way you thought. But then it's good not to persist in it and to stop doing that and do something different.
Well, exactly, and that's what individual human experimentation is all about. And a lot of times we won't get all the information we need from other sources. We will dabble in to assimilating information from various sources. But at the end of the day, we are the laboratory. They always used to say back in the day, your gym is your laboratory, you know, and the diet you adhere to in seeking that classical Greek look, if you will, it comes from your own personal laboratory. The results are a birth of your own personal laboratory, which is your gym and your kitchen, quite frankly. And that is the way we learn. And we all have different goals, what we want to look like. I also think genetics should be taken into account. I believe that you should go in with the sky's the limit attitude. I think when you take your genetics into consideration, you will be more successful. Because I think too many individuals left genetics out of the equation and tried to accomplish lifts and goals in terms of power that their bodies were really not structured for. I learned that myself the hard way and incurred many injuries as a result. And so I realized, look, I'm not structured for that. So I'm going to do the best I can with what the universe has given me, what the Lord has blessed me with. And I felt that I looked a little bit better and felt a lot better when I chose that path. So that's another aspect that perhaps we can get to more deeply involved in the future when it comes to quality body sculpting.
We definitely will, and I came to much the same conclusion that at this stage in my life, I'm not going to be competing or attracting anybody with the way I look. But I do have a certain degree of fitness that I've recognized since childhood that represents my ideal. And I'm not that far from that ideal. You know, it's something I can work on for the rest of my days just to give myself joy and satisfaction and enjoy better health. So that's what it's become for me, and that's perfectly okay. We're running out of time today. Before we close, I wanted to say that we're dedicating the Elysium Project to the memory of Corinne Fitzpatrick. I didn't know Corinne as well as I would have liked, but we interacted on the phone a few times and on Facebook a few more times, and she seemed like a very wonderful person. And I know from Michael that she was indeed a very wonderful person, and that many people will miss her. So here we dedicate this activity to her memory. And I will be designating Michael a champion of Olympus. We have a handful of them. And the reason they're champions of Olympus is because they've unselfishly given of their time and energy to support this activity, to try to improve their health and the health of their loved ones and the health of their communities. And it's a conversation. We invite you to participate. We invite you to listen and share your thoughts. And as Michael pointed out, there are various avenues where you could share this conversation by email, online, on the podcast. This conversation is open to anybody who cares to become involved in it. And we have several new Argonauts who've joined the quest. And we have several old timers like Michael and myself who are always on the quest, regardless of what we call it. Onwards to greater understanding and greater wisdom. And Michael, how can people get in contact with you, and how can they benefit more from your ministry?
Well, they can write to me at Caldwell, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, zip 07006. I have a Creative Health Manual that's available. I also do absolutely free counseling and prayer work, and I bathe my lengthy prayer list in white light, because I think everything began with the white light. And I have a Creative Health Manual that's available, and they can write to me at that address, Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006, and I'll be more than happy to share with them.
And those are all wonderful, and I have them, and they're all awesome resources, and I highly recommend that people look into them and benefit from Michael's lifelong quest. Just want to add about the Elysium Project, what that means. Now that our sojourn has returned us to northeastern New Jersey and the greater New York metropolitan area, I was inspired to dedicate myself to actualizing the ultimate dream for me, and I'm Greek. Manifesting Elysium in the here and now. Elysium is the highest heaven the mortal mind can conceive. And the ultimate project is our ultimate attempt to help make this world a better place for everyone and every living thing living in it. Bold, yes. Attainable, probably not in our lifetimes. But if you're going to give your time and energy to something, it might as well be to something awesome. And I believe that the Elysium Project is awesome. It's certainly the best thing that I can think of to do with my life. So thanks to everybody who tuned in. Thanks to Michael. Thanks to Corinne. Thanks to all our other hosts and Argonauts and listeners. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. This show, in case you missed it live, will be available on demand for as long as Blog Talk Radio exists. You can access the show there. Michael, again, thank you very much. You're an awesome individual.
Thank you so much.
I'm very honored to know you.
You as well, sir, and we're proud to be with the Son of Zeus.
Thank you very much. And we're going to close with Mighty Elohim, which was composed by Linnell Griffin. And this is an earlier version of the song. She's since evolved it, and it's available online. But here's the one that she gave us permission to use.
Sound the trumpet.